Good morning! This is Chris Mao, owner of the Blue Box Cafe, located in historic downtown Elgin, Illinois. We are America's premier Doctor Who cafe, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. Come to the BBC for the coffee, stay for the community. I'll see you in the future.
Too Much Scrolling for May 26, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Today, Chip, May 26th, it is 6 months to Thanksgiving.
6 months to Thanksgiving? Well, that probably is a good time to head over to the Blue Box and grab maybe a turkey sandwich.
There you go. Get some turkey sandwich on. We're so happy to hear that our beloved Blue Box Cafe is reopening this week. Our friend Chris Mao, his wife Kathleen. I'm so happy to hear that maybe, just maybe, a little bit of normalcy is headed our way.
Exactly. And you can go over and hang out at the outside. I mean, they've got this beautiful fountain across from them. You can So you don't even have to stay inside. You can just grab your stuff and head over and hang out in the beautiful outdoors.
Sounds like a great plan. Congratulations also to all of our students who are moving up a grade. School's out for the summer, Chip. As far as I know, sitting in the same spot I've been sitting for the last 74 days.
School's out for the summer. School's out forever.
Potentially, yes. Potentially forever. That is more valid this year than any year before this, for sure. Oy vey. Yes. Here I am sitting in the same spot that I've been sitting, but now I don't have schoolwork to do, so now I need to find a new hobby. Have you tried podcasting?
Oh, maybe we could.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Your time, your sleep pattern has been all messed up. So you watched some movies at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I did. I did watch this during a regular time. I've been meaning to watch this for a long time. This came out back in October and November. It was Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. If you're not familiar with Linda Ronstadt, she was an incredibly gifted arena rock singer who started off in the folk scene in San Francisco. So we get the story of her life. She currently has Parkinson's, which is a sad ending to the rest of her life because she's not performing. But I didn't know a lot of any of this before watching this film as far as her life story.
Well, you knew that she was bilingual and she put out albums both in English and in Spanish before this, right?
Well, not initially, no. She did grow up in Tucson. Her mother was from Michigan. Her father was from Arizona. She grew up like right on the border of the United States and Mexico. So she said the music she learned was from the radio stations coming across the border. So she learned how to sing in Spanish. They ended up moving out to San Francisco after she graduated from high school to try to make it as a singer. She was gifted at finding songwriters and making their songs her own. So I don't think she wrote any of the music she performed, but if you've ever seen her perform somewhere, she certainly does own the material. She was part of the Stone Ponies and put together a song as they were playing in a coffee house. That's where she was first noticed. Eventually, she grabbed the Eagles. They weren't the Eagles at that time, but that was a band that she toured around with for her first tour. And she was able to grow and probably was the first big singer. Like one of the comments in the movie was, she was the Beyoncé of the time. And she was friends with pretty much every female in music at that time. And it seems like that she created a sisterhood among them to kind of take care of them, each other, because as you can imagine, if you have a male rock band that's backing you up or something of that nature, at the time, that was not really unheard of. And maybe many of those people playing as musicians really didn't want to be there. They wanted to be maybe with a male lead singer or having their own band. Emmylou Harris told a touching story about her husband passing away and how Ronstadt took her in and basically, I want to say nursed her, basically allowed her to recover and gave her the confidence to go out and continue to be the musician that she knew she could be. And then after she kind of had her rock albums, I want to say she had 5 platinum albums, she decided to just kind of play around and jump genres. So at some point she decided she was going to be in the Pirates of Penzance. She was tired of touring arenas. She also was in Nelson Riddle. She wanted to sing his music. She before going to bed at night, many times she would listen to this Frank Sinatra album. Nelson Riddle was the orchestra or led the orchestra that accompanied him. And she decided that she was going to put out a few albums. And I think she put out 3 albums with that. Eventually did country music with Emmylou Harris and with Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton's interviewed quite a bit in here. She's pretty awesome. And then she wanted to do an album of music from music that she grew up with. Some of the Mexican traditional music that she said, I grew up and I love this music. Each time that she jumped genres, they said that she was creating suicide for her career. Each time it worked out real well. And what I really got from this is while she was a person who had very strong opinions politically and a number of other areas, she was also a person who really, I think, took care of the people around her. She recognized it was a business early on. She recognized that she needed to do things that she enjoyed and needed to be true to herself. And she certainly was in the moment of the time. And it's a shame that she noticed that her voice was going away. Unfortunately, she's not going to be able to perform anymore. But you know what? She had a great life, and this is the retirement she's living in right now. So this was nice. I would say 60 out of 100. If you have interest in music, you have interest in an artist who was able to stay true to what her vision was, I cannot think of a better person that you would try to emulate.
There you go. You also got to see another documentary, this one about Jack Kirby and his time in World War II.
Yeah, I woke up. This is the odd time I woke up in the middle of the night, and I flipped on Amazon Prime. I ran across this. This is called Kirby at War. This is a French film. So part of this is in the French language, which it's a reading film. And part of it is in English also. For those not familiar with Jack Kirby, if you've watched any of the Marvel movies, anyone from The Hulk, Thor, Captain America, The Avengers, these were all creations of Jack Kirby. He was the artist who worked with Stan Lee to create the Marvel that you know. And this is a celebration of Kirby's artistic work and then where maybe he got the inspiration of this. So what do we know about Jakob Kurtzberg? Well, he grew up in New York. He was in a very poor area, very tough neighborhood, a Jewish neighborhood. And he really had not seen much of life. But he ended up getting drafted, going into the army. He went over on D-Day. And this is about his experience in France and about the adventures he went on. And when I say adventures, I don't mean that in a good way. I'm talking about he's in war situations and some of the challenges he went through. Ultimately, the argument in this film is that those experiences during wartime, his first time seeing meadows, the challenges of being in incredibly intense situations end up inspiring how he viewed his art, how he viewed his storytelling. Jack Kirby's visual storytelling, everything is bombastic. It's over the top, very intense. I think they were on to something here. Kirby at some point was injured. I mean that his feet were rotting from wet shoes and boots, and he almost lost his leg. He was actually pulled out of his duty to basically go and recover. He had drawn a couple of self-portraits. One was in July when he first got in the military and was writing his wife, who he loved dearly. And he drew the second one that they showed in October. And if you've ever seen the pictures that, of Abraham Lincoln before the Civil War and then at the end of the Civil War, and watched how much he aged during that period of time, Kirby, in just a few months, aged considerably. In fact, he wrote a letter back to his wife saying, I hope you still love me. I don't look like the person that you saw leaving for the service. And you realize how stressful being in a wartime situation is. Along with all these interviews about him, we get some artists showing a little bit about how he created Kirby Crackle, his shorthand for showing energy, and how that can be used. He certainly was an inspiration to a lot of artists, and certainly to the pop artists art movement at the time. I really like this. This is not a high budget type of film, but they've got these really cool scenes where the military is moving, his unit's moving through a forest, and all of a sudden they've got all these explosions going around them, and they're using the Kirby artistic style and that bombastic material. And it's fascinating. I do recommend this. I would say this is probably 75 out of 100.
Okay. And then, of course, you got to Finding Jay on Amazon Prime. This is our local story, right?
This is about Jay Bakuchin. He lives in Kenosha, Wisconsin. That is what interests me in this, because he is researching Bigfoot, and I had no idea that there were Bigfoot sightings in our area. And from our homes, we're probably, what do you think? We're maybe 45 miles from Kenosha, Wisconsin. It's right across the border from Chicago.
Yeah, something like that.
So anyway, he's a guy that lives up there, and he goes and hikes the Kettle Moraine State Forest in Wisconsin, which is, I don't know, 100 miles of deep ravines and deep, deep forest. And there have been Bigfoot sightings there. So he's doing a lot of interviews with local people about their Bigfoot sightings. He's taking you on some of their hikes and all sorts of stuff. My interest of this was local guy, and then, you know, throwing the Bigfoot part of it. The one story that sort of interested me most was one in Fox Lake. And I couldn't figure out whether it was Fox Lake, Illinois, which is, I don't know, probably 15 miles or less to Kenosha, or if it was Fox Lake, Wisconsin. I don't know. It was a police officer who was called, this is about 25 years ago, was called out because some guy was walking down the middle of the highway and you know, somebody almost hit him. So anyway, the police officer rolls in. He's telling his story. And he goes, this guy was a big, tall guy. He's about, 8 feet tall, big rectangle. And the police officer pulled up behind him with his car, put on his lights, and got out of the vehicle and says, hey. Anyway, this Bigfoot character turned around and hurled a dead German Shepherd, and it landed on his hood of his vehicle. And then as he's, you know, the police officer's in shock, he's got this dead dog on his car, and all of a sudden the Bigfoot goes into the forest. Well, he gets back to, you know, the police station. He's got to write this report, and immediately everybody's making fun of him. He said, quickly, I kept that story quiet. So anyway, it is on Amazon Prime. This is certainly it's like your neighbor putting together a film. It's a little long. If it didn't have a Wisconsin, you know, connection to it, or a Chicago area connection to it, I certainly wouldn't have watched it. But it was kind of interesting to kind of realize
2 o'clock in the morning, late night television viewing.
Yeah, and once again, there's this huge state park out there, and you can go and hike the deep woods, and it sounds like maybe there's something out there, Steve.
Hiking is for trudging defeatedly.
Well, we learned that with our next film that we're going to review, right? So what do we get to watch, Steve?
That's right. We got to see Patton Oswalt in his latest Netflix stand-up comedy routine, I Love Everything. You probably know Patton Oswalt as the voice of the rat in Ratatouille or as TV son of TV's Frank from Mystery Science Theater 3000. I love Patton Oswalt. I will watch him in anything. And boy, this is a comedy special from a guy who really needed to say some words because he's had a hard time the last couple of years. His wife passed away suddenly, and he has now remarried. He's raising his daughter, and he's got some stories to tell.
Patton Oswalt typically is thought of as a very funny guy. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's 50, and this is kind of it's kind of flat. It certainly isn't as enjoyable as I thought I would want it to be.
I unfortunately agree with you. This is not as fun or as funny as I expected from Patton Oswalt. That's the main crux of what he's talking about is turning 50 and what it's like to be in that new demographic. And it's not easy to be in the age demographic that you are, Chip.
Well, you know what? You've had enough experience in life. Like when you're young, you complain about certain things. And it could be that you just don't know a lot about stuff. But when you're 50, you actually have some knowledge on how things work and have all the answers. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of like having a 50-year-old kind of complaining like he was doing. You're going, okay.
Yeah, the frustrations change as you age, that is for sure.
While this wasn't as enjoyable as I thought it would be, and I could compare it to, you know, Gaffigan. And George Carlin, who basically, he put together a new set every year, George Carlin did. His wife was one of the writers of that. And he's always seemed to be fresh. And Jim Gaffigan also is a guy that puts out new material every year. He seems to be fresh. Jim Gaffigan, one of the things I'm enjoying most right now is if you are alone and you need to have dinner with someone, Jim is basically offering his house. He basically has all his kids. I think he's got like 20 of them. Anyway, they all sit around the table at his house, which is a bigger house than most of us have. But you know what? It's just a house. And they all eat, you know, what kids eat, macaroni and cheese or bloody sandwiches or whatever that thing is that mom has worked so hard or dad's worked so hard to make that they're going to ignore. And they basically all sit around having their conversations and entertaining themselves. And you could be part of it.
Yep, they're calling it Dinner with the Gaffigans. It's every day on YouTube. It's in our show notes. You can click on it and have dinner with your not family that's just having dinner. Very entertaining, guys. Patton Oswalt is very entertaining. I'm not going to judge him on this one comedy special. I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as I expected to, but he's got stories. He's a storyteller, and you know that's what I love is hearing about people's lives. So
I'm going to judge it on one level. I think that he needs a stylist because he's a 50-year-old man who walked out in tennis shoes. I think that where the presentation was part of one of the challenges of his show, of this comedy set. I think he just looked, he looked like an adult child as opposed to a father and an adult who's been through some of life.
All right. That's a very interesting thing to criticize.
I think that the view of it, how you look at the presenter is having an impact of what it is. He's talking about things like a 50-year-old, but he's dressed like a 30-year-old.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. That's a very interesting perspective that you have. Also this week, I got to see Red Nose Day. Okay, we need to back up and explain Red Nose Day again like we have for the last like 6 years on this show. Red Nose Day is a British creation whereby they collect all the celebrities that they could find and put them into sketch comedy pieces on a special night on television to raise money for kids. The Americans have been trying to make this happen in this country for several years now, and so NBC and Walgreens have come together to present Red Nose Day, and they gave us a celebrity escape room this year.
Oh, wonderful.
This celebrity escape room was quite entertaining. Jack Black was the host and the all-knowing game master, like one of his characters from those R.L. Stine movies that he plays, just being ridiculous and over the top and talking with his fun accent where he's telling people that they're wrong. This was a lot of fun. This was executive produced by Ben Stiller, and the celebrities that were involved were Courtney Cox and Lisa Kudrow from Friends and Adam Scott from Parks and Rec.
Okay.
I enjoy the concept of escape rooms when I'm not involved. I would be way too frustrated with the puzzle personally, but I like trying to figure out a puzzle that somebody else is involved with.
And this was on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
This is an annual tradition that people still don't know about. People still don't know about Red Nose Day. You can buy your big rubber red nose from Walgreens and wear it around on that day and support children in need. That's the idea, and it works really well in Britain. The British really embrace this, and there's so many celebrities that are involved and so many fun things that happen on that night. And the Americans just haven't gotten into it. It existed, and people didn't notice. But you can go to rednoseday.org. You can still donate. You can still watch all of the footage from Celebrity Escape Room and find joy and help others. There you go. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
Opening this week, or more likely streaming, a movie that we talked about before called The High Note. This is Tracy Ellis Ross, the daughter of Diana Ross. She is a superstar singer in this one, kind of like her mother. And Dakota Johnson plays a young up-and-coming personal assistant who also wants to break into the music business.
And we talked about this, I don't know, a month or so ago, but they're just releasing it now in streaming and it never made it to the theaters. I think that's, and we're going to run into a lot of stuff like this. We're still, everything is uniquely set up for streaming. So yeah. That is being released, I guess, again, or in a new format. And right. Then we also now have, Steve, our fantasy of the week.
Your fantasy story of the week, The Green Knight, a retelling of the medieval story of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight from King Arthur and the Round Table.
All right.
Yeah. We've talked about this so many times. The Arthurian story comes around every 3 years in England, and they love that story. We here in the United States, not so much. I mean, King Arthur is fine. It's a fine story. And Sir Gawain is a fine story about, you know, finding this mythical creature that if you cut its head off, then you get its power. Okay, fine. That's fine. There is a movie called Debt Collectors. This is the sequel to The Debt Collector from 2018. This is stuntman Jesse Johnson, who wrote, directs, and stars in this movie about a guy who has amazing skills, and they're put to work to collect debts around the country.
All right.
It's fun to watch Jesse do his work. That's about the whole of this story. We've got coming to Netflix this week, Space Force, the comedy from the minds of Greg Daniels and Steve Carell.
And this on paper looks wonderful. Steve Carell is starring in it. It's certainly has a lot of things it's going to be about, the new military branch, Space Force. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the trailer certainly doesn't do it any favors. The trailer looks awful.
Yeah, I don't have high expectations for this one like you have. Greg Daniels is kind of hit or miss for me. The Office was not a favorite of mine. I didn't love Parks and Rec, but oh, come Upload... on.
But Upload. many people like The Office and Parks and Rec. It I certainly know. Has large audiences for that.
And Steve Carell in The Office and with Greg Daniels writing was certainly a great team. So I have expectations for what the team can bring to Space Force. But I'm keeping my expectations kind of muted because I'm not sure that this is going to be as great as it seems. It is Fred Willard's final performance. Fred Willard passed away last week, and this was the last thing that he did. So I look forward to seeing him again, that's for sure.
I think we may have talked about this next film also. It looks wonderful.
Yep. It's called The Vast of Night. We discussed it a couple weeks back. This is a New Mexico 1950s story about a strange sound that's heard from a switchboard operator and a radio DJ, and they turn toward the skies because maybe, just maybe, there are aliens coming to New Mexico in the 1950s.
Oh, you were saying New Mexico. It wasn't Linda Ronstadt, was it, coming from the...
No. She's not an alien. I'm not an alien.
Steve, we've got a brand new streaming service. Anything coming out this week?
Yeah, HBO Max, the next phase of the streaming service wars, is coming out this week. And they have a series of episodes about a defense attorney taking on the case of a lifetime. They're calling it Perry Mason, which is really interesting.
It is. Why do they need to revise this brand? I mean, they could have called it John Smith. But anyway, it's Perry Mason, does it star Raymond Burr?
No, this is set in 1932 Los Angeles, which is very different from the Raymond Burr Perry Mason. It stars Matthew Rhys, who was Lloyd Vogel in the Mr. Rogers movie, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Okay. Well, anyway, this looks actually good.
And, yeah, because it's directed by Tim Van Patten, who you might recognize his directing style from Game of Thrones, The Sopranos, Boardwalk Empire, Sex and the City, The Wire, The Pacific, Rome, and Deadwood. That's a list of successful HBO shows.
All right, Steve, is there anything on Apple TV Plus for you?
Yes, I'm going to have to keep paying Apple TV Plus this month and next and July because there's a new animated musical series called Central Park that is premiering on Apple TV Plus this week. This is from Lauren Bouchard, the creator of Bob's Burgers. Bob's Burgers has been on my television every day of the social distancing because my eighth grader loves the comedy of Bob's Burgers.
Oh, how wonderful.
That show has replaced The Simpsons in our household as the animated show that we watch. Bob's Burgers is brilliant, and I look forward to what a musical animated comedy will look like for Central Park.
Does Bob's Burgers, is it on Fox?
Yes, that is a Fox animated show.
Okay. And this is going to be on Apple TV Plus.
Mm-hmm. Apple TV Plus, buying up all of those stars, those names, and hopefully with those stars, with those names, getting something good out of them. But boy, I got to tell you, their batting average is pretty low at this point. They've got these great names that don't give us great productions on Apple TV Plus yet.
Okay.
Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. Have I told you how we were doing a daily podcast about Sherlock Holmes? And every time I try to say Sherlock Holmes, I almost say Shakespeare because I love Shakespeare so much, Chip.
Nice. Well, anyway, as we talk, our special Shakespearean language, Steve.
Yes. This, I have a chance to read all sorts of books, and one of my authors that is on my list of books that I love to read is Christopher Moore. He has written several series of books. He writes in trilogies. My favorite trilogy was the Pine Cove trilogy, Practical Demon Keeping, The Lust Lizard of Melancholy Cove, and The Stupidest Angel, A Heartwarming Tale of Christmas Terror. That's my favorite series from Christopher Moore. But he gave us the third part of his Fool series this week. It's called, wait for it. It's called Shakespeare for Squirrels.
And that was released last week. So, Steve, we are reviewing a book that was just released. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I do actually read books that come out and read them as they come out and review them on the show every once in a while. Like I said, this is the third in a trilogy. The Fool was the first book of the series. This features a fool, a medieval fool named Pocket, who is the hero of the story. He travels around performing Shakespeare plays, and the characters that he encounters are the characters from Shakespeare. They have all of those names from those works and all the characteristics of those characters. And this one is much more like a noir mystery, a Dashiell Hammett murder mystery, under the guise of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And the fool has to find who killed Puck, the sprightly character from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
And did he do well?
Pocket does fine. Pocket solves the mystery, and we have a solution. The question of, did Christopher Moore write a great story? This is not one of my favorite of his writings, for sure. There's something about this one. He was trying a little too hard for me. It's a clever mix of a murder mystery and Shakespeare. It's got a truckload of snarky lines to it, and there's silliness, there's cleverness, it's funny, but the thing that really got me is it's excruciatingly vulgar. Like, every sentence of this writing contains an F word. Like, every sentence, Chip, it's overwhelmingly vulgar.
And so my question on that, anytime you're using so vulgar languages, I would say, does the conversations, do they flow naturally, or are they, is this just being thrown in there?
It is presented as normal conversational language, and he is really good at writing dialogue. I did enjoy the storytelling. I enjoyed the murder mystery and the solution to the mystery here, but it really distracted me to see so many naughty words and so many naughty situations. There's a lot of nudity. There's a lot of uncomfortable nudity in these situations that he's writing about. It's about fairies, and the fairies turn into squirrels, which in and of itself is not, offensive, but then they describe the genitalia of the squirrels afterwards like 20 times in this book. It's like, okay, we get it. They're mammals and they have mammalian parts. I don't need to think about these things.
What do you think prompted him to use those types of descriptions and that type of language?
I think that he's trying to sell books, and he's trying to appeal to an audience, the South Park style, the animated. We talk a lot about those animated cartoons that are made for kids but are vulgar. South Park being one prime example, that Rick and Morty. And
made for children? South Park's not made for children.
You don't think so?
Young adults.
You think? I don't know. My students watch all that vulgar stuff, and they think that that is normal conversational language sometimes. And I think that that's where he was headed with this, was this is supposed to sound like what normal conversation sounds like. And I just disagree with it on a level that really bothered me. The afterword, Christopher Moore gives us the story of the creation of this tale. He says, "I know what you're thinking. A Midsummer Night's Dream is my favorite Shakespeare play, and you have ruined it." He goes on to explain that it's not his fault that this book came about as a result of a contractual obligation. He wanted to write a completely different book, but his publisher said, "No, you need to write this book with this character in this situation," and he was obliged. He had no option on what he was going to write, and so he wrote this book and then basically wrote an apology in the book. That's odd to me. I don't want to know the backstory like that sometimes.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. If it was he forced to write this, and was he, this is his clever way, or basically his way of rebelling against the contract that said, this is the book that you need to present to us.
I can see that. I can see that perspective. I can see how he delivered what he was told to deliver with a little extra to it.
Well, you know, you think about a long time ago in 1970, Rolling Stones had basically created their own record label. And what they were looking to do is break away from Decca Records. And Decca at the time came to him and said, hey, listen, you still owe us a song. So the Rolling Stones recorded a song for Decca Records called Schoolboy Blues. And it does have another name to it. But anyway, in this song that they released, they presented to Decca and said, your contract said you needed a song. Here's the song. It had a lot of references in it that made it something they couldn't release to the public. So all of a sudden, Decca had the contract fulfilled, but certainly not something that was in the spirit of what they thought should be given to them. And, you know, I can't help but listen to your description of this and then knowing the backstory that he was kind of obligated to write this. This could have been like his little dig back at the publisher. You never know. You never know. If you're forced to do something, humans find a way to rebel.
And the interesting fact is that this book is on the New York Times bestseller list this week.
Okay.
It has sold really well. So maybe there's an audience out there that wants to hear about squirrel genitalia that I'm just not aware of.
There's something else about this. A Midsummer Night's Dream is something that seems to be picked as a backstory for a number of things. I'm thinking back a number of years ago, Neil Gaiman was writing the Sandman comic in number 19. Used that as a background where Morpheus created a partnership with Shakespeare, and they actually present this play in that story. Ultimately, that comic won the World Fantasy Award, and that was the only comic to ever win that award because they changed the rules after Neil Gaiman won that. So it just seems like that Shakespeare or the retelling, and even, what is it, last year, Ophelia was starring, of course, Rey from Star Wars.
Sure.
Was also presented.
They're just great stories. 400 years ago, Shakespeare was an absolute genius and wrote these amazing stories that, yes, were taken from other stories in many cases. But since then, everybody has taken a page from Shakespeare and used it, and to wonderful effect. This Shakespeare for Squirrels is not a bad book. It's not bad storytelling. I'm just questioning his choice of words, and for me, I would not recommend this one to my students for sure.
Well, it doesn't sound like it was written for your students.
Nope.
It wasn't written for middle schoolers.
No, definitely not.
How about adults?
Adults who really enjoy profane language would probably enjoy this. Those of us who study Shakespeare, I enjoyed all the Shakespeare references, all the different characters who are drawn directly from A Midsummer Night's Dream are in there, and that's fun. It's fun in its own way.
Okay.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our Scroll With It. We mentioned already, HBO Max is premiering this week. They are offering a discount if you sign up before tomorrow when they start airing that. I guess airing is the right term for an app. I don't even know anymore. Before
streaming.
That app start is available
tomorrow.
They are offering $14.99 a month for HBO Max, but if you sign up early, they'll take $3 off for the first 12 months. So that's certainly teasing me and making me think that maybe I should give them some money to get this service.
Well, you know, if you start adding up Disney Plus, Apple Plus, Netflix, Hulu, HBO Max, what do you get out of this? You're starting to get creeping up to the cost of a full menu that you would get with a streaming service like Sling TV or YouTube TV or something of that nature.
Question of whether you want the full buffet or if you want to try the a la carte. We've been talking about this for a decade. The a la carte cable package where I'm paying $10 for this and $14 for that adds up really quick.
So going back and recognizing why AT&T merged with Time Warner, what did they want? AT&T wanted the catalog. And what did they do with the catalog of material? They created their streaming app, which ultimately is, they recognize the big boys on the block right now are Disney Plus and Netflix. So they wanted to create their own version of it. The question is, how many of these are we going to subscribe to? I have AT&T as a cell service. I have one of their premier plans. So I do have access to HBO Max for no additional cost. While, you know, I enjoyed Westworld and I enjoyed Game of Thrones and, you know, throwing The Sopranos and stuff like that on there. How many of these type of services are we really going to subscribe to, or are they just going to become carrots that get thrown on services that we already have? I think for Verizon customers, I think they get Disney Plus.
The other way to do it is, instead of buying a whole streaming package, you can just buy access to the one show. You mentioned Westworld. You could certainly buy access to that show if that was something important to you that you wanted to see. So this is where I get kind of mixed up in this. I want access to the new Doctor Who that started in 2005. There are 10 good seasons and then two other seasons of Doctor Who that are going to be exclusive to this HBO Max. So if I want streaming rights to that show, I need to get a subscription to HBO Max. Or I can buy access to just that show and maybe save myself a little bit of money along the way.
So tell me a little bit about that, because Doctor Who, something that you enjoy watching, they signed an exclusive right with HBO Max.
Mm-hmm. The only place in the United States where the new Doctor Who will be streaming is HBO Max.
Legally. Let's make sure we're clear on that.
Okay. Yes. There are certainly other ways for me to acquire those pixels.
And this is the modern version of it, not the historical shows.
Correct. Classic Who is still only available on BritBox streaming in the United States. Okay. Also, Pluto TV has a 24-hour classic Doctor Who channel, so I can turn on Doctor Who anytime, any day.
So, and Pluto TV is owned by who?
CBS and Viacom.
And they're going to be creating their own mega app too, so...
And they are partnering with Verizon with that. So your AT&T service gets you HBO. My Verizon service currently gets me Disney Plus, but I might be getting a combination of Pluto CBS in the very near future through my service.
So you see how this is going. This is becoming fairly complicated. And it also is, they're trying to, you know, dig into, hey, instead of paying $40 or $50 for your cell service and pay us $100 and you get all these little bennies thrown in there.
Right. It is very complicated and it's very frustrating to those people who aren't paying a lot of attention to it. If you want something, you have to figure out where that something is and then figure out, you know, if there's an alternative price that you could pay. HBO Max makes it even more complicated. Calling it HBO Max and making it a whole separate thing from HBO seems even more confusing. If you get HBO Max, then you get access to HBO as well. It's all marketing. It's all very complicated. Mm-hmm. So I'm still torn over whether I will give them money. I sincerely doubt it, though.
It's 15 bucks a month as a standalone. So, Steve, we got ways to make things less complicated, and they won't cost you anything, right?
Well, if you want a sandwich, it'll cost you something. Blue Box Cafe in Elgin is reopening in the midst of the coronavirus. We wish them the best. They are opening again on Thursday. Too bad, right after Geek Pride Day. That was a little clever on their part to not have to host Geek Pride Day this year.
Well, I think they would prefer to have it. All right, so now that Blue Box is open, and good luck to everyone visiting this historic place in Elgin, Illinois. We want to also mention that people can join us for no additional cost every single morning, right?
Yep. Speaking of sandwiches, you can get sandwiches at irregular hours with our whole daily podcast on the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes. We're reading through one story at a time. We're currently in the middle of A Study in Scarlet, the original Sherlock Holmes novel published in 1887. And Professor Pamela Bedore joins us every morning. And we have way too much fun, Chip.
She keeps us on task. That's what all the listeners need to know about her regular show. She keeps us on task, doesn't let us deviate too much.
Just enough. Right.
She allows us to be playful enough.
And then she gets us back on, okay, let's talk about Sherlock Holmes. And we're like, yes, Professor, we'll get right back to that. It's been so much fun. I appreciate you and Pam and our listeners who have kept us going with that schedule.
And you can read along with us. You certainly can click through the link and get a copy of A Study in Scarlet and all the other Sherlock Holmes short stories at no cost to you. And you can read along if you have questions or you have comments or want to make fun of us or tell Professor Pamela Bedore how awesome she is. All you have to do is send them to our email.
How much you appreciate her for keeping us on task as opposed to the Tuesday show where she's not here, so we just run wild. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we come back next week, Steve.
Yep. If you need more information, you can give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasselflug.
See you in the future.
Release the sandwiches. What I want to talk about is what I want to thank you for. What I want to thank you for. It means so very much to me. Without you, I would never see the light. Let my sandwich go. To be a sandwich or to not be a sandwich? That is the question.
Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, sorry.